We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Today's episode is sponsored by Holiday Inn, Niles, and Circle Federal Credit Union. They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
Mother of three missing brothers from Michigan is speaking up. Tanya Zuvers made a statement on social media tonight. Her attorney has filed petitions to have Alexander, Andrew, and Tanner Skelton legally declared dead in December.
As far as we know, John is set to be released on November 29th of 2025. A Lanawee probate court hearing for declaring the boys dead was scheduled for November 4th of 2024, and then was later moved to December. As Tanya moves to have the boys declared dead, we suspect this will give the justice system a chance to charge John once more. John has never officially stood trial. Instead, he pled no contest to three counts of unlawful imprisonment. We have been considering the possibility that when John gets released, he will give up more information, or he will end up sharing some unknown information. If Tanya gets the boys declared dead, John could be charged with murder and stay in jail. If this ends up being the case, we hope John will do this right thing and tell us what he knows. I hope that after all these years of him being the only one who truly knows what happened to the boys, we will finally get an answer out of him. Each of his stories have been carefully looked into by investigators, and he continues to hold true to his initial claims.
This case is a very interesting one. With all the different stories John told the police to the mysterious Joanne Taylor who allegedly took the kids, there were so many twists and turns that led police in all different directions and caused many questions. In our search for information on the case, we were able to find a book called 76 Minutes, My Search for Andrew, Alexander, and Tanner Skelton by Lynn Thompson. In the book, Thompson had a really good breakdown of John's behavior. He calls him the axe. In Act 1, John was a good dad. He believed that this was an easy role for John to play, because when this all happened, everyone thought this was so random and out of place for him. Even Tanya, the boys' mother, stated that he was a good father.
He said, as a dad, he was a great dad. Everything that we saw, he was an awesome dad. Everything he did was for his kids. This just doesn't make sense.
In Act 2, Lynn believed John played the innocent dad and failed because he didn't have any facts to back him up. He said the kids were safe, but once the police found that Joanne Taylor wasn't real, he got arrested and an Amber Alert was issued. At no point were any of John's claims able to be backed, and he expected investigators to take his word about the events that transpired. Lastly, Act 3, the distraught dad. Lynn stated that John couldn't conceal his broken ankle, but did well covering it up with the story of him trying to commit suicide. Lynn also believed that John's broken ankle indicates Skelton hurt himself hiding the kids' bodies. Investigators failed to recognize this because of their flawed methodology. An example of that is if Skelton said that he broke his ankle falling to the concrete basement floor, and his basement floor has a concrete floor, the conclusion has to be that this is how it happened, said Lynn.
John told investigators many false theories on why the boys went missing. He said that the boys were taken and even said that he gave them away. Whatever it might be, I don't think anyone truly knows except John, as he was the one supervising them on the day of their disappearance. With him having a mysterious broken ankle the next day and him traveling to Ohio at 4:30 in the morning, his actions just don't make sense, and that's why many theories narrate him as a danger to the boys. Many say that his ankle injury may have happened when he harmed the boys, but Skelton stated that he tried to commit suicide. Assuming that this is a true statement, my questions circle around why would he be suicidal on the day of the disappearance of his boys? He may be feeling a lot of personal guilt instead of eagerness when it comes to finding his sons.
Our goal, along with everyone else's, is to find the boys alive and well, or at the very least, to find out what happened to them that day. This case is different from other missing persons cases. It involved not one, but three young boys who seemed to just vanish without a trace. Missing persons cases are never easy, especially when we don't have all of the facts and have been told multiple different stories over the years. 840,000 children are reported missing in a year, half of which are family abductions. Statistically speaking, when children get kidnapped, it is more than likely by someone that they know or by someone who is close to the family. Most child abduction cases are family-related and often happen during a divorce or child custody dispute happening between the parents, which Tanya and John were experiencing at the time of their disappearance. When dealing with family-related abductors, it is harder on law enforcement officers because of the family aspect. Whether it's a parent or other family member, the child may not want to leave their abductor simply due to the fact that they know and trust them.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Having three children go missing at the same time is very rare. It's not normal for three children to just disappear. Concealing three children versus one carries a higher risk of getting caught by law enforcement or people recognizing the missing children. The only other known case that is similar to this one that happened on May 5th, 1993 in West Memphis, Arkansas, it involved three missing boys named Christopher Byers, Stevie Branch, and Michael Moore that went missing while out bike riding together. They were found by law enforcement the next day in a ditch in a wooded area known as Robin Hood Hills. This case is very similar to the Skelton Brothers case, and I believe that we could use methods from this case and relate it to the case at hand. Many investigators have hinted at the possibility of the boys being in a body of water nearby and were missed by initial search efforts.
With the new facets that have been carved into the Skelton Brothers case, we've slowly been starved of new information and fell out of contact with the still grieving family. We know that the boy's mother, Tanya, has recently been involved in several court hearings involving the status of her son's lives, and there are still more things to come out of this case.
Alexander William Skelton, Andrew Ryan Skelton, and Tanner Lucas Skelton have been missing since November 26, 2010. Given their undisputed disappearance for over 14 years, the statutory presumption of death applies. Presentation of evidence, however, does not present clear and convincing evidence that John Skelton murdered these children. The information provided at this trial provides ample opportunity for speculation and theories, but to make such a finding, the court would only be joining those voices offering such speculation and theory, given the lack of information. The impact of this ruling is not lost on this court, for it is also a part of this community. But the court must follow the law. And to ignore it in this case risks the very structures upon which our system of justice is built. Thus, it is with the gravest of condolences that it is ordered Alexander William Skelton, Andrew Ryan Skelton, and Tanner Lucas Skelton are presumed to be deceased as of November 26, 2015, in accordance with MCL 700.1208, subsection 2.
We've collectively decided to shift our investigation to that of Chelsea Small, a young mother from Taylor, Michigan.
Chelsea Small was a mother of two and a college student at Wayne County Community College when she was shot twice and killed at her place of work on November 12, 2013. The suspect was caught on CCTV in broad daylight committing the crime, and yet he still goes unnamed and unprosecuted for his crime. Chelsea was low risk, and the circumstances of the crime seemed strange. The actions of the perpetrator were puzzling, and investigators scrambled to figure out a motive for the heinous crime.
We spoke with countless individuals involved in this case to flesh out as many details as we could. Those we contacted include Debbie Kamen, Stephen Schwein, Matthew Schultz, and Dakota Bostick. While we've collected a plethora of information about this case, we've been fortunate enough to be in contact with Dakota, a former police department intern and university student at Concordia. Dakota conducted an in-depth investigation for his criminal investigations class at the university and was only halted by the conclusion of the fall semester. We have been beyond lucky to be able to review Dakota's research notes and were eager to pick up where he left off. In cases such as the Skelton brothers and Chelsea Small, eyewitnesses and help from the public are crucial pieces that could help crack these cold cases. The perpetrators are relying on anonymity and their actions or identity being concealed. With enough public outreach, someone will have recognized John's Blue Dodge Caravan on that fateful day, or the identity of the man who murdered Chelsea Small. Missing this information, we're forced to backtrack and put together clues that were left behind at a crime scene to assemble the most accurate depiction of events. In our upcoming episodes, we'll continue to investigate and discuss the case of Chelsea Small and the circumstances surrounding the getaway of the perpetrator. We'll share unheard clips from her mother, Debbie Kamen, and firsthand accounts from Stephen Schwein, former Taylor Police Department detective who was on the case from the start. With the evidence that we have, we are looking to substantially move the status of this case and rekindle the public's interest in finding the individual who committed this heinous crime.
Underestimated podcast, Skelton Brothers, was researched, written, and produced by Alexandra, Miley, Adeline, Tiffany, Emily, Cheyenne, and Shay. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Emily. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping to fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we will be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.